Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing amazingly well, Josh. We are now in the flow. We finally have a game week under our belt. All of our prognosticating, all of our previewing, it's come to bear. And now we can finally talk about a game week that has come and gone.
Yeah, there comes a point where it's fun when the fantasy game launches. It's fun to start planning for your game week one. That stuff is all fun. The game launched so early this year that we had about 7 weeks to do it. And, the fun of the game for me is reacting, right? It's sort of making snap judgments or just making decisions, right? Like, this player's out. I'm going to hold with this player. I'm going to keep the faith with them. This is this is a midfielder that I want to buy in the future, all that kind of stuff. It's stuff you just can't do until the game launches. And so now we're here, and now, you know, we can start to sort of plan for that. I already have a transfer that I'm like planning right now, which I'll get into in a little bit. And so the theme of this week's episode, which a nod to Peter King, a great NFL writer, is 10 things we think about the Fantasy Premier League game after game week one.
Right. I'm excited to talk about those things that we think. And then we're also going to get into a preview of the fixtures of game week two and talk a little bit about our bus teams. You no longer have to figure out what your entire squad's going to look like. Now we can zero in on what one transfer you and I are thinking of making. Before we get into our content for this week, just a quick shout out to Blue Wire. We are now on a new network. Some of you used to listen to Always Cheating on SoundCloud, but we have moved with Blue Wire, which is this great sports podcasting network, to Art19. But here's the thing, Josh, nothing has really changed. We're still the same old podcast. It's just you and me doing our thing. But if you want to keep up with Always Cheating, you can find us on all different podcast platforms. We name them all at the end of this podcast every time, so you know what they are.
Yeah, you don't have to resubscribe anywhere with the one exception of SoundCloud. So if you're subscribed on SoundCloud, now you need to find us on Art19, on the Blue Wire website, on Stitcher, iTunes Store, whatever. So that is the one change. We did want to note that right at the top of the podcast, in case you wondered where the podcast went. So, Brandon, just a couple of quick housekeeping things. We have a new T-shirt in the Always Cheating shop.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've been in communication with our friend Mystic Mia, who runs Third Eye FC. And if you don't know Third Eye FC, it is a special FPL league just for female FPL managers. You can go to thirdeyefc.com for the league code. Mia has prizes every month for the best performing managers in that league. And she also supplies all these amazing graphics on her Instagram. So she's worth a follow on Instagram, even if you aren't a female manager. But we teamed up with Mia to create a special design for Always Cheating. Go to our shop at alwayscheating.com and check out the design. It's on this cool gray, athletic gray T-shirt. And they're for sale. And when in working with Mia, we actually gave her some money to help with the prizes for her league. So we're feeling like this T-shirt is kind of like in the spirit of supporting what's going on at Third Eye FC. And it's an opportunity for us to share that with the Always Cheating listeners.
That's And I think it was a good sign. I think that my wife, who has never and will never play fantasy, saw the design for the new T-shirt and said, I want one of those. So definitely check it out. All right, Brandon, let's get right into it, man. It's a score check time. I don't know about you. I was feeling pretty high, pretty good about my score after Saturday's matches, after Friday's and Saturday's matches. Going into Sunday, I was like, you know what? As long as Aubameyang doesn't do anything, as long as Man United doesn't keep a clean sheet, you know, as long as nothing happens with Marcus Rashford, it's going to be a great game week for me. And didn't quite go to plan. I mean, no. Why don't you go first? You had a good game week.
Yeah, I had a good game week. And this is like the ultimate humble brag situation in that my great disappointment was that I ended 2 points shy of the century mark, 98 points. And I, as a lot of people saw when I posted my team to the @HailCheaters Twitter feed right before the deadline, is I went with 3 premium players with Salah, Sterling, and Kane up front. I stuck to my guns with Harry Kane, and I was definitely sweating it till the final
first
minutes.
85 minutes.
Spurs Philly game. Yep. And what a treat to get not one, but a third absolutely meaningless goal there in the Spurs Villa game. And it was it was just beautiful for my overall rank and total points.
Totally. Just a quick note on that. The second goal, I mean, the first goal that he scored, the second goal for Spurs, I saw Jack Grealish getting a lot of grief on Twitter about this. But I mean, why Jack Grealish is single-handedly defending Kane in the box is a question that Aston Villa has to answer, right? Because, I mean, somehow Jack Grealish is like single-handedly trying to stop Kane from scoring there. It seems a little
he was tackled just outside of the 18 holding on to the ball where, I mean, blame his teammates for not yelling like man on, clear the ball. But he did give up possession in the worst possible part of the pitch.
Okay, that's true. That is true. Okay, fair enough. But someone should have covered, okay?
Yeah, right. Where's the help? Where is the help? I mean, forget Grealish. It's all about Super John McGinn. And a shout out to my good friend and our producer, Chris Carter, who was singing McGinn's praises all summer. And I took him up on that and put him into my starting lineup for game week one.
Yep.
Yeah, and he looked great. I mean, we'll talk more about Aston Villa and some of the promoted teams and how their attack looks. But that was one of those goals that was unexpected and takes your game week to the next level. Yep. My defense, too, performed brilliantly. I ended up not doubling up on Liverpool defense, which was all the rage. And I just had Van Dijk.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the fullbacks on there. Yes, thank you, Pookie, our patron saint, doing me a solid, and maybe that's the last favor he'll do me all season. I've already cashed in all my chips. But with Ederson and goal, Van Dijk, Dean, and Loughton at Burnley, which is kind of a coverage pick, covering a lot of the
Pope people,
goalkeeper owners, it really did work out. So all in all, I just couldn't be more happy with my team. Blanks just from Iosi Perez, Shea Adams, and Josh King. And looks like my overall rank for the game week is 75,347. So already in the top 100K. Let's see how long I can stay there.
And I, you know, I'm not even that far behind you. I mean, I finished on 86 points for the game week, which, you know, in a normal game week, you know, 12 points behind somebody is pretty normal. And so, you know, overall ranks are so crazy right now and so tightly bunched. I mean, I have 86 points, which is not bad, but I am 523,000 in the world. So pretty massive drop off there. You know, I had a really good defense as well. I mean, the real issue for me was that front line. And I decided to go with the 4-3-3 in the end. And, you know, $21 million worth of forwards equaled one Van Dijk. I had 1 point from Delafeu, 2 from Jota, 5 from Wilson. Fraser didn't come through either. And so, you know, in the end, I mean, you get 86 points in game week one. I think you normally feel pretty good about that. I think the real and I actually do feel I feel fine with my team. I mean, I've got to drop Delafeu. That was a bad pick. But if I didn't have him, I would have rejiggered things and I would have had a Perez. So, you know, I see that as like basically like a 2 point drop off there. Nothing I'm too concerned about. Delafeu will go this game week. I'll talk about that a little more later.
Okay.
But you know, I mean, to me, the real problem, if it so to speak, is that there are just so many Man United fans across the world, and when they do well and you don't have Man United players, it is going to be a rough game week for you. So I think that was really the. I mean, I guess you know, I'm 523,000 in the world. There's 5.8 million managers, right? So I'm in the top 10%. After one game week. And so I'm not going to get too caught up in that's actually something we're going to talk about later. So I'm not going to get too caught up in overall rank. I feel fine with my team outside of Delafeu. I mean, it's just I think it's funny that we spent, you know, 30 minutes in last week's podcast talking about 6.5 million forwards and they all did poorly. Across the board, except for Timu Pukki, the one guy we didn't really talk about because they're playing Liverpool away.
Well, it was, speaking of, we have a couple of questions from our listeners to just help us reflect one last time on game week one. Harold wants to know what surprised you most this game week. And the other question comes from FPL Chancer Dan, who says, what was the game week one gut feeling you regret not following? Dan, this is Dan speaking. I just knew Pookie would score at Anfield. So Dan definitely should have put money down on that. So what were the surprises and what were the gut feelings that you feel like you didn't trust?
To take the second question first, nothing really. I mean, I went 4th at the back. I really never planned on going five at the back. If I did, I guess I might be regretting that right now. But I mean, I don't really know what I would have done radically different. I mean, I guess I could have played Lucas over Fraser, but I mean, that's a 4-point difference. You know, I'm not too bothered by that. You know, so I think, what surprised me most, I mean, I think it's, you know, I don't know how you could say anything but Man United, just clobbering Chelsea. I mean, and the fact that maybe we all kind of did underrate that team a little bit, right? I mean, there weren't massive changes. I guess there still could be because the European transfer window, the non-England transfer window closes later, and I guess Pogba could still leave. But they just look like kind of the team last year that was pretty good until the end, and now they're a little bit better, right? Their defense looks better. So Wan-Bissaka getting 8 points was a killer.
Yeah, and I guess he was good for it. You've forgotten quickly how much of a bonus point magnet AWB is. He cannot get an attacking return to save his life. But
and Tammy Abraham, it just, oh man, so close. 5 minutes into the game, he whacks it off the crossbar.
I was honestly surprised at just how rusty so many of these teams looked. It felt like more than any other Premier League opening weekend than I remember that teams just looked like they were shaking off a lot of rust and maybe just betting in a lot of new players. But just to Dan's question about my gut feelings, and this is just like hilarious hindsight thinking. Like I feel like I remember having a feeling that my other premium guys, Kane and Sterling, had a good chance of doing much better than Mo Salah. Mm-hmm. And captaining Mo Salah over Sterling or Kane at the end of the game week, it's not a blunder, but I missed out on some points there. But we talked about this in a lot of our preview content of being much more conservative heading into the start of the season, and that will serve to benefit you. So I can't regret it. And certainly watching that Norwich-Liverpool match and seeing the points come in for Salah, that felt good. And that felt just as good as, you know, finally getting the relief of Harry Kane scoring a brace.
Totally. It's 1 point difference anyway. Even 8 points between Salah and Salah and Sterling isn't that much, really. I mean, it's a big overall rank jump for sure, but it's not a season-ending worry.
All right, that was my ban-worthy humble brag, but now we have a rant of the week. This is it's a reoccurring segment that we like after every game week. It's a rant that comes from one of our listeners who had something remarkably strange or bad or in an interesting way happen. And this one comes via our Slack from FPL G-Soul, who says, "My day." Here, this is, he's just laying out his day, his Friday for us, right before the game week deadline. "My day. I've had my team more or less intact since the release of the FPL site, bar some peripheral changes tested in the Rate My Team Slack channel." It's a little marketing there for you, Josh. "Plan to have my last sanity check today, enter surprise invitation to dinner from new neighbors, and panic starts to scream into my veins. I get tunnel vision, taste of blood in a bad way, dizziness, actually feeling drunk, even though sober. Without being aware, I rip up parts of the team and decide on the doorstep to dinner to change some key elements. FPL-wise, it still could be good or bad. I really don't even know what points I have, but my dinner focus was miles from polite. FPL starts to kill my social life already." We've all been there, right?
Yeah.
And I love that usually the social situations that are ruined is when you know you're having a bad week and then you really just can't communicate with friends or loved ones.
Oh,
I love
totally.
Just the idea of it's already ruined even before the matches begin.
Oh, yeah. I felt it a little bit when Kane scored a late brace in the 86th minute yesterday. It was like, I was like, I need like 10 minutes to shake this one off. I was like, I know it's game week one, but I just need to go like sit in a corner for 2 minutes. And like, of course I didn't rant, but I wanted to.
Yeah. Honorable mention for rant of the week to our patron, Sam Danby, who actually destroyed his car rear windshield just before the game week deadline. I think that made things tough for Sam.
Was that good, like for like a scream, like he an anxious scream just like shattered the window,
it with his sonic waves. let's talk about managers who are actually doing well though, and that's in the Always Cheating Super League, which is never too late to join. Just click the league tab at alwayscheating.com, or the league code is on all of our social channels. Josh, you want to take us through the top 10 after game week one of the Always Cheating Super League?
I do. All right. Top 10. Here we go. Late stage Fergieism in 10th, tied with Davler's Dragons. Stetletico Madrid in 9th, FC Biceps in 6th, tied actually with Bread Gang FC and Metro Fighters. See, my pronunciations, Brandon, are already off to a great start this year. In off the post is 5th. Devin 17 in 4th, Guille for Guardiola in 3rd. I kind of had to, like, I said that one out loud before I figured out where they were going there. six times Kloppo in 2nd, and FPL Mavericks. Nice, simple name, Brian. I like that. In 1st, congratulations to Mav Brar, 117 points and 1,500 overall. Very well done. Brandon, while I'm talking, you know I love to talk. I will just quickly note before we get into the 10 things we think that we have a ton of new Patreon supporters. Much like last week, we're actually going to list them at the end of the podcast. I hope no one who is a new Patreon supporter is upset or offended by that. But we just had this is like a real humble break again. But we just had so many that we really need to get into the podcast, and so we're going to thank everybody closer to the end of the podcast. But if you supported the podcast in the last week, you will be thanked on this week's podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. We did our first kitchen table podcast on Thursday. I recorded that one. And Brandon, you're doing the one this week. So something to look forward to.
Absolutely. And that's what you can expect at the Lord Sorloth patron level and above. It's an extra podcast every week just before the game week deadline, just to shore up our thoughts and cover any interesting news that happened throughout the week. And we offer a lot of other cool stuff for our Patreon supporters. So, yeah, check it out at patreon.com/alwayscheating. Shall we take a quick break, Joshua, and come back with our big list of 10 things that we think after game week one?
Let's get to that list. Brandon, we're back. 10 things we think after game week one. All right. I have about 50 thoughts. So I like that we just kept it to 10. First one. This was a chaotic game week. Don't panic and don't look at your rank. Okay. So I think you should not look at your rank, Brandon.
Okay.
That's my deep thought.
Yeah. I think that's good advice. Yeah. There are a lot of huge mega scores. We just talked about them with the Always Cheating Super League. Everyone in the top 10 is breaking the century mark. But your rank is not telling the whole story right now. And the chaotic nature of the game week, it's like what I was saying about a lot of these teams being rusty. Leicester Wolves, you mentioned this on our Twitter feed, Josh, how Leicester Wolves would have been an exceptionally fun match if it happened 4 or 5 or 6 game weeks from now, because both of these teams looked, they didn't look their best selves. They're both fun, attacking focused teams. And it's really difficult to judge who the standout performers were on either of those teams, which could be under FPL sides.
You know, I mean, last year, you know, one of the most fun matches I watched all of last season, the match that got Claude Puel fired, most likely, was this 4-3 Leicester Wolves match, you know, sometime in February, whenever it was. Amazing match, late Jimenez assist, I'll never forget that. They're two really fun teams that have a lot of attack. I just like watching both these teams play, right? Like if you just gave me like a big run of, you know, 5-6 matches on a Saturday, I would gravitate to one of those two matches if I had a, you know, fantasy player in them. I just think, early on it was, I mean, Diogo Jota, who has been on fire all during the summer, looked like, I don't even know. He looked like Kane in August in previous years or something. It was like,
he could not hit a barn door. Yeah.
It was bizarre. And I mean, on the one hand, it was like, he looked bad. On the other hand, it didn't, right? Because I mean, he was doing a lot of really good stuff. It was just the end product wasn't there. Right. I mean,
he got himself into the positions. Yeah. The shots were just really, really woeful.
Yeah, exactly.
Other teams that stuck out to me, Bournemouth, which we'll talk a bit more about, Watford, Southampton, even Arsenal, beating Newcastle 1-0. But watching some of that performance, I just wasn't sure what the takeaways were. And we didn't see soon-to-be breakout stars for Arsenal like Pepe. They were still working with Mkhitaryan in the midfield, who didn't really cover himself in glory. So we have yet to see the full lineups of some of these squads, and we have yet to see the full caliber of some of these mid-table squads like Bournemouth and Watford. So it's like still too early to judge those teams as well as it is our overall ranks.
I'm like almost ready to call Watford bad. I'm like, great. I don't know. I mean, I watched most of that match yesterday.
It's so strange. They were quite good last season. How does that happen?
Totally. And like you said, just one match, but wow, it was discouraging. Joseph says, should I fall for the Man United great in game week one trap again? Yeah, Brian, did you get any David Moyes? Remember his first game with Man United was a 4-0 win. And obviously, Ole was, that was away to Swansea, if I remember correctly, like 5 years ago, 7 years ago. How long has it been since Sir Alex retired now? Like six, seven years? I don't know. I mean, I think we're going to get to this in a minute. So I don't know too much about them yet, but I came away from it feeling like I probably underrated their defense, and that Anthony Martial is. I mean, it's like I feel very predictable in my opinions about it, which is that Anthony Martial was probably a little underrated. I somehow missed that he got the number nine. He's a new number nine, right? Was he a number nine last year as well?
No, he just picked up that number this summer. So right. When that was the death knell for Mr. Lukaku.
Right. Okay. So yeah. So he picks up the number nine, you know, doing it like he was very active in the match, only 7.1% ownership, 7.5 million overall. I think he's a real contender. I wouldn't drop Ryan for him yet. Ryan, that is to say Fraser, Ryan Fraser. I would not drop
first name basis with all these players. Yeah. We've been podcasting for too long, Josh.
I gotta drop Ryan for Anthony. But if I had no other problems with my team, it'd be something I consider. I mean, they're playing away to the Wolves, which is not a great fixture, but you know, Palace and Southampton, Leicester at home, and you know, game weeks 3, 4, and 5. If his price doesn't rise, which it almost definitely will, I would definitely consider a Fraser to Marshall swap in game week 3, because that's when Bournemouth play Man City.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about the chaos of the game week based on Eric Freeman's question. Can we trust the eye test after United versus Chelsea, or was that just a strange week, one fluke result? Do you have anyone from either team that's on your radar? So are there any matches that stick out to you this week where you felt you were trusting your eye test? Or like, I was feeling more often than not that my eye test was just kind of useless because the teams were just figuring things out themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I was impressed by Brighton and actually reasonably impressed by Sheffield United as well. I thought that they acquitted themselves really well in that match. I mean, they're playing a Bournemouth team that attacks really well, in general. And I thought they really acquitted them. Obviously, they came away from it with a point too, which is hugely impressive. So, I mean, that's not like the sexiest team to talk about, but I sort of came away thinking like, okay, this team like might be some fantasy assets on here. I mean, like, you know, maybe it's more in the defensive end of the team.
Right.
You know, Billy Sharp is interesting, but obviously came on as a sub. It's not clear if he's going to be starting anytime soon. If he was starting, you know, like if I thought he was going to start in game week 2, I would maybe consider, you know, bringing him in for Deulofeu because, you know, they play Palace, Leicester, and Southampton home in 3 of the next 4, you know, so it's a really solid run of fixtures.
All right. The second item on our 10 things we think there's a lot to be gained from thinking outside the box. Specifically, we're thinking about, those managers who, not necessarily the diehard United fans who would have had AWB in their team regardless, but people who did have a sneaking feeling that Man United would have a good start. Ashley Barnes, of course, was a great pick for game week 1. And even like a manager such as myself, Josh, who went against the grain and picked Harry Kane, went for a third premium or a premium up top.
Yeah.
Thinking outside the box, conservatism versus outside the box. It's a delicate balance, is it not?
It is. Yeah, it really is. You know, I think that there's like a rule of thumb that I try to keep to. I think this actually comes from Jay Eggersdorf, who's a, you know, really well regarded manager. He's going to like a lot of great finishes in some interview where he said, you know, it's you just don't want to pick a player that nobody's talking about. You know, it's like there's always a pool of players that you want to consider, but those are usually names that are getting bandied about and talked about. It's the like completely like it's like there's the box, there's outside the box, and there's like the other like solar system. And those are usually the players you want to avoid. And I think that, you know, I had this thing with the Man United defense where I just sort of thought, well, yeah, sure, Wan-Bissaka's ownership is 34% or whatever, but But those are all Man United fans, you know? And it was almost like I let like the Man United fandom thing prevent me from thinking about those players as options. I don't really know why I didn't consider Man United more carefully. I guess I just felt like Chelsea at home in game week one, I don't know what to expect from either team. Away to Wolves in game week two, you know, I don't see that as a particularly good fixture. They're fine after that, but it's really hard to build a team around a team that you want to have in game week three. You know, like during the season, maybe you can plan for the first two game weeks. Maybe you have an eye towards game weeks three and four, but it's hard to be like, I want to bring in one of these expensive players because, you know, in 2 weeks' time, I'm really going to want to have them.
But here's the deal. This is why the last episode of our preseason coverage is called Unanswered Questions.
Right.
Because we still have unanswered questions heading into game week one. That's why this episode is called Things We Think. Because we learned stuff in game week one.
Right.
But we didn't learn everything. And Man United is a great example of a team that exists in the unanswered questions and things we think categories at the same time. They were a team in total upheaval since the end of last season when things sort of tanked for Ole. Ole is still around. They brought in some new players. No one was knew what was going to happen with Pogba. It was just, it was a risk to go with Manchester United, as big a club as they are. And I think we're getting some good feedback from Manchester United right now.
Yeah.
Do we have the guts to pull the trigger yet? I'm not sure.
I think part of it, too, is like the Pogba thing was tricky, you know, because, you know, many signs pointed to him leaving the club during the offseason. And then, you know, the transfer window closes on Thursday. So suddenly you're like, oh, OK, so Pogba is a player I can consider. But by the time like Thursday night rolls around, it's, you know, he's not a cheap player. And so if you wanted to bring him in, you would have had to do like some kind of surgery, you know, to make it happen. Right. He's 8.5 million. It's not like you can just like, you know, even like, even if you wanted to move Fraser to Pogba or something like that, you still have to find an extra million somewhere. It's not easy to do, you know, with these sort of carefully put together teams that you have. So I think that was part of it for me, too, is I just didn't know what that team was going to look like. And then, you know, as it turns out, once the deadline was done, they were pretty settled. You know, I mean, they, you know, especially once they brought in Maguire, you know, right after the Community Shield. So, yeah, and the I guess Pukki's the other player who, you know, was a good I guess the whole reason I was thinking about this as a thing that I think, Brandon, we should just stop saying that because it's hard to actually say. But I was just thinking about how, you know, maybe the bands of players that we're considering, the solar system of players that we're considering isn't quite, maybe we're not thinking broadly enough. You know, I mean, it's like you just look at the, you know, like the you know, I hate to use the word template but like, you know, there's sort of like there were a lot of players that were in a lot of people's teams. You know, if you're on social media, if you're, you know, if you're on our Slack, if you're anywhere, you know, anywhere where you're talking about fantasy with other people, you were seeing 7, 8, 9 players in the same team, you know, and, you know, you look at the top, and obviously there's a fluky element to it. We're 1 week into the season, but, you know, you look at Eric Peters, you look at Ainsley Maitland-Niles, you know, Ashley Barnes. I mean, you know, these are players who are dominating after one game week, and, you know, they're all cheap, and you would not have had to break your bank to have them, and nobody has them, basically.
Yeah, it's true. That will soon change.
It will soon change for sure. Yeah.
One thing we do know, though, is 8.5 at Manchester United buys you the full-time penalty taker, which is actually Marcus Rashford now.
Yeah, I know. I've got to get over some stuff with Man United at the end of last season, but I'll get there. Brandon, do we talk about number three, man? Let's just do it and let's get past
Let's rip it off.
Yeah,
rip it off. Okay.
Yep.
VAR. We weren't sure how dominant it would be, but now we know after game week one, VAR is exactly what we thought it would be.
Right.
Both in terms of the decisions that were being made and in terms of the disruption, the complete and utter disruption to the flow of the game and the emotional aspect of
totally.
It.
Totally. So it sucks.
I think we're both on the same page here. VAR is stupid. Listen, we don't want to be these angry old peanut gallery
totally
guys who are afraid of change. Change is good. We accept that onward and upward to the moon, to Mars. Let's go.
Totally. Although I will say it is, look at some of my Twitter mentions about VAR and you will see it is hard to defend VAR without sounding like a character in Black Mirror. Okay. I'll just say that much. Mm-hmm. Or maybe one of the people who talks about the greater good in Hot Fuzz, or possibly even the Borg. All right, Brandon, in Star Trek. So I've given you three mm-hmm. different ways to describe the people who are pro VAR, some of whom are good friends. So that's, you know, it is what it is. It definitely is not as fun, you know, to watch a match and not be able to celebrate goals anymore. That was, I liked celebrating goals. I thought that was a fun part of the game, but you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
What was so noticeable too were the ironic cheers from the fans in the stadium when inevitably the VAR screen would pop up. It's still, yes, what you saw was a goal is still a goal. Computer says goal. And yeah. Everyone's like, yay, cool. And that really stuck out to me. And we, as carpetbagging Americans, we always talk about how one of the great features of the Premier League product globally is its authenticity and the right. The vibe that you can feel through your TV screen. It's happening there at totally. The ground in
it's
the
not like the NFL, where in the NFL everything is getting constantly reviewed. Every game takes 4 hours. I'm not saying it's that bad, but it was a scary trend over the weekend. Maybe Mike Dean shouldn't have been calling that Man City game. I don't know. You know, he's kind of an active manager to begin with. But I mean, there's still an offside referee. Thing. I mean, there's still an offside thing. Like, that's been talked about to death already. But like, obviously, it's ridiculous and it's just not fun. And I, you
no
know,
one yeah, needs that call to be made.
Totally.
Unless exactly. you had some sort of betting line on the match.
Yeah. And I guess like, you know, it's, I don't know. Like, I don't want to go on about it because I, you know, it's like people on both sides feel very strongly and dug in about it and whatever, but it didn't feel very fun to me, and hopefully that changes. And the Den Donker one was kind of a bummer too, because you're like, oh man, like a 4.5 million guy just scored a goal. It's like a guy that we all have in our team. And then it was you don't get that one either. And it's like, okay.
I think for most managers on Den Donker, it was less the celebrating his goal, more that we would be celebrating security and price. Maybe mm-hmm. even an uptick to 4.6.
Oh, we definitely would have got an uptick for sure. But I also would have lost all those Leicester clean sheets. A Perez clean sheet point would have been wiped away.
Yeah.
you know, so it was whatever. All right. So what we think VAR is bad, yeah. right? That's yep. one thing we, yeah. And that's like not even a fantasy thing. It's just like we had
to talk
about it.
Why don't we just change it from VAR to BAD? That's what I say.
Right. So we're not going to talk about it all year. This is like unless there's like some massive, hugely controversial thing, maybe we'll talk about it. But I do not want to do this podcast where every week you and I talk about VAR and our feelings about it. That does not sound like it's fun. That would not be fun for anybody. But obviously this opening weekend, right. It was such a dominant force that you kind of had to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. All right. The fourth thing we think is the big at the back strategy is still in play. But with a few caveats now. So Liverpool, Manchester City, Everton, Manchester United to a degree, as we discussed, they all came through. Oddly enough, though, Liverpool came through only in the attacking sense. But you have to feel for the people who went for Robertson, because that seemed like the sensible conservative pick. Mm-hmm. What could possibly go wrong?
Right.
And Virgil van Dijk opens with a goal, and Trent, who looked sensational out on the right-hand side in the attacking sense. He got skinned a few times defensively. Mm-hmm. So there it is. The big in the back strategy effectively worked. There were some haters who were surfacing online after Liverpool's clean sheet wiped out. But when you look at the results at the end of the game week, I feel like the big at the back strategy is doing what we thought it would do.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, you know, I have all four of my defenders and my goalkeeper had attacking or had, you know, returns this game week, clean sheets or attacking points. And I mean, honestly, if Van Dijk, if Liverpool keep that clean sheet, you know, that would have been massive too, you know, a huge swing there. It's hard to say though too. I mean, you know, a game like we just talked about Leicester Wolves earlier, that's a 0-0 in game week one. Is that a 0-0 5 weeks from now? You know, I mean, I'm thinking of a ball that Team Lemons plays across that he decided to hit as hard as a human being can hit a ball instead of sort of lightly crossing it to Jamie Vardy to score. And so, you know, just like things like that, or just like it's not, they're not quite synced up yet. I mean, I think, you know, Jota, I mean, you know, he's been finishing well all season, and maybe, I don't know if it's the pressure of the moment or the Europa League or what. But, you know, just little things like that, where I just think like all these teams are going to tighten up their attack, you know? And I think once that happens, we'll start to see, you know, more goals in the upcoming game week. So we'll see if that strategy holds. Yeah. But obviously, you know, I mean, when you look at, like you said, I mean, look at, you know, Liverpool, I mean, you know, I got points from, I mean, you know, obviously there's two ways to get points from a defender, right? Clean sheets or attacking returns. And it was, you know, it was attacking returns from Arnold and Van Dijk that really helped my game week. So
let's talk about the fallout from this Alisson situation though. So Alisson is out injured. We don't know the full extent of the injury though. Klopp was suggesting it's not great. It's down. I mean, I don't know, from like his head all the way down to his calf. It's a problem.
Yeah.
People are suggesting it might be 4 weeks at the smallest amount of time. Mm-hmm. So it could be 4 to 8 to who knows. Is it worth making the switch, regardless of what goalkeeper you have, to Adrian at 4.5, who looks locked in now to be starting goalkeeper at 4.5 for Liverpool? Mm-hmm. And how does it make you feel yourself being doubled up on Liverpool defense now that one of the best goalkeepers in the world is not playing? Are you feeling good about the? I mean,
yeah,
it seems ridiculous to suggest that just because Alisson is out, that suddenly Liverpool's defense is bad.
It's a very good question. And I think actually bringing in Alisson would be a reasonable, or bringing in Adrian would be a reasonable move. I mean, this Liverpool defense was really good when they had Loris Karius and Simon Mignolet alternating. And in fact, they're even better now because now they have Van Dijk, you know, from the start of a season. And obviously they didn't really have Trent either when they were rotating those two. Maybe, I guess, near the end of that season they did. So, you know, I think that back line is so good. And they, yeah, I mean, the extent of the, like, you know, how long it's going to go on for is really the big question. You know, I think the next few game weeks, it's fine. You know, you get into October, if he's still, you know, if he's still battling injuries, then you've got the Europa League as a factor as well. And they play Man United, Spurs, Man City in 3 out of 4 matches. I'm going to hold now with the double up. I think it's reasonable to bring in Adrian. I mean, at 4.5 million, starting keeper. If I was wildcarding right now, or even when I wildcard in game week 3 or something like that, I would absolutely 100% have Adrian. I mean, would you as well?
So this is this is what I want to talk about, because there is this huge temptation to jump on Adrian right away. And a goalkeeper transfer is like the last thing that you want to do, particularly for a not starting GK, because Alisson will come back at some point.
If you have Alisson, that's
move
a good
Adrian.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have Alisson, I think it's a good move.
Right. That's true. But what you're suggesting, though, if you bring in Adrian, is it's not one, but it's two goalkeeper transfers that you're already committing to outside of a wild card scenario. So maybe the early wild card is timed perfectly to mm-hmm. bringing Adrian in for 3 to 4 weeks or whatever the extent of the Alisson thing is. And that might be right around the time that you then trigger your wild card and you can resolve the Adrian situation. But I can't, like, if I have Ederson, mm-hmm. I don't see it being worth me downgrading Ederson to Adrian. That what I gain from that 1.5 in the bank versus effectively losing a free transfer on that move, which I think is a wash. And also we're going to talk in our next item about budget keepers. Like, what budget keeper are you going to move out in favor of Adrian? So let's just jump to point number 5 in our things we think budget keepers are also pulling their weight. You look at what Nick Pope and Matt Ryan did this weekend. They're doing exceptionally well. Mm-hmm. Henderson and Heaton, they didn't get clean sheets, but they played well too.
Yep.
So I'm just thinking of like who you're taking out apart from Alisson to slot Adrian in.
Yeah, well, I think I would bring, if I just was, you know, like, for example, I mean, I think Alisson was owned by like 32% of managers or something like that. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's definitely, there are definitely people listening to this podcast who had Alisson, you know. In fact, our good friend Trevor Ingerson, Brandon, has Alisson. So that was, I was watching that Liverpool match with producer Trevor, and that was a painful moment. I kind of had to walk away for a second, just let him, you know, deal with it. I think there's a lot of options. I mean, you know, I think, you know, Pope played well. You know, he's less appealing just because they do play away to Arsenal and they play home to Liverpool in two of the next three, even away to Wolves. That's not a good fixture for them either in game week three. So, I mean, you know, I guess you could get some clean sheet or like some save points from him. You know, I think, you know, Henderson, I watched that Bournemouth match start to finish. I thought he played very well. I guess in the end, he only had, he only had two saves. It felt like he played well, though. I felt like maybe the two saves that he had, I thought were pretty good. And I just sort of was impressed with how Sheffield United defended in general. So I think he's definitely in consideration as kind of like I'm rotating Pope and Henderson right now. And I do mm-hmm. like the way those rotate, at least until I play my wild card. So. I think that I don't know. Like, I don't know if I have a strong feeling about one particular 4.5 million player. I mean, I'd say Adrian just because Adrian is, you know, he'll be on a team that has an amazing attack. So he's not going to have to face too much pressure. And he's got an amazing mm-hmm. back line that'll protect him and presumably really, really step up. And maybe that even changes the way Liverpool play a little bit, you know, to keep him like right. a little less exposed. So, yeah, I mean, what do you think of those like kind of five or six, like which ones stand out to you?
Yeah, I guess Matt Ryan does stand out to me because the fixtures for Brighton coming up, we'll just rattle them off. West Ham, Southampton, both at home in game weeks 2 and 3.
Yeah.
City is bad in game week 4.
Sure.
Then we've got Burnley and Newcastle. So really, really great defensive fixtures for Brighton. And I think Matt Ryan was a really interesting play for managers who brought him in for game week 1. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Adrian, just reflecting on watching him for West Ham, he had some ups and downs there. But on the whole, I found him to be a pretty decent shot stopper, not at the level of Fabianski. But I think that he'll have some good moments with Liverpool and he'll do in a pinch.
Yeah. At that price, it's just so tempting to try, see if you can get away with it.
Yeah, right.
All right, Brian. Well, that's the first five. Should we take a quick break before we get to the next five?
Yeah, let's do it.
Football season is here, people. That's American football. That's right, Brandon. Not just the Premier League, but American football has launched as well. It's time to start placing your bets for NFL and college football. Blue Wire is teaming up with sports information traders and John Price, one of the world's most successful sports bettors. So our listeners are given the chance to make more money betting on American football this season.
Woo.
Go to sportsinformationtraders.com/blue to get college football and NFL future plays and make up to 15 times your money for only a $99 investment.
Just a few notes on what you get for this $99 investment, Josh. Last year, Sports Information Traders correctly predicted the Clemson Tigers to win the college football championship, making one client alone $110,000. The year before that, Josh, Kurt Pressley at Sports Information Traders made $1 million with a preseason wager on the Philadelphia Eagles to win the Super Bowl. Imagine having $1 million right in your pocket, Josh, from one little bet. Amazing. John Price at the Sports Information Traders team, he can guide you on the best way to make money on futures bets and preseason football betting picks. You get all that for just $99 and the opportunity to make 15 times your money. It's totally worth getting Sports Information Traders betting picks. And here's the bona fides, Josh. Sports Information Traders has been featured in ESPN, Gambling911.com, Entrepreneur Magazine, and more. John Price has been successfully making betting picks on sports for over 20 years. Make a big return on a small investment with Sports Information Traders Futures Picks.
Brandon, our listeners can get started now by going to sportsinformationtraders.com/blue. Again, make sure you go to sportsinformationtraders.com/blue to have your chance at a 15-time return this American football betting season.
All right, Joshua, we are back and we have five more things we think. Have we got a trademark on that yet? If we say the phrase 25 times,
yeah, can we steal it from somebody else? I know. Yeah, I wonder.
All right. Yeah. The sixth thing we think, let's jump into it. What is it, Josh?
Man City are still very good. And this is the double one, Brandon. All right. This comes from the same match. This match didn't teach us much, if anything, about West Ham. some fun moments with Allaire at the beginning of that match. Some moments where you thought, hey, West Ham might actually score something here. And then the destruction came on. And what can you say? I mean, it was, Sterling had 20 points in the match. He could have had, I don't know, 30. I mean, here's a question for you, just sort of tied in with this and maybe jumping ahead to our game week two preview. But are you, did that just lock in Sterling as a game week two captain for you? Is there anyone else that really stands out to you? It's going to be very hard not to have him, right, for game week two.
Yeah, and Manchester City, just historically, recent history, I should say, are just so terrific at the Etihad at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I think I have to do a little bit more soul searching about how I feel about this Spurs team. I mean, I really stuck my neck out, I feel like, backing Harry Kane, where a lot of other pundits were not really talking about him. So what does that say about what I think about Spurs and how they can match up against Man City? And how does that make me feel about the armband? I guess what you're actually asking is, what you're actually asking is, would I captain Sterling? I don't know. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
He looked great. Yeah, he looked great. Yeah. I think what we confirmed is, yeah, that City are still good. We also confirmed that, yes, Raheem Sterling above the likes of Jesus or Aguero or KDB or Bernardo Silva, he's the man. He is the focal point of the FPL attacking returns.
Yeah.
He's a must have. I'm sad to say, like, it's really tough when in a really expensive player against, when we have other expensive players to shoehorn in, is a must have, but he is.
Yeah. My real concern now is that does he just become a 38 game week captain? You know, I don't know, you know, sometimes you say that stuff and then something happens that throws you off a little bit, but it's going to be very hard to look past him, I think, for the time being. I mean, I'm looking at, you know, there's game week three, Salah plays Arsenal at home. Sterling plays Bournemouth away. Like, who's the better pick in that one? You know, like, it's a tricky one. So there's but between those two, it feels like it's a little bit locked in right now. And we've felt this way before. We've talked about this has happened with Aguero. This happened with, you know, Robin Van Persie, if you want to go back that far. It's happened with Luis Suarez. And, you know, you always are like, for me, it's a lament. I know for some people, they like it. They like just having it like out of their hands. They just pick a captain. For me, it's like a bummer. I want there to be like five or six captain picks any game week. I just think it's more fun. But I think, I think right now it's really locked in between those two. And you really couldn't. It's hard to look anywhere else.
Yeah, right. So West Ham, it was less that West Ham were defending really well in the first half and then fell apart. I think that Manchester City just looked kind of rusty, to go with an earlier theme of this episode. But yeah, Allaire, I thought, looked like he had this stature that I noticed, that I feel like there are good things to come from him. And he had this stature and this mentality, this look in his face. Gravitas, can we call it? I'm excited to see him play a weaker team, to be honest. But with the City attack, you kind of saw this happen with Liverpool too, right? Like, at some point, Liverpool and City just started steamrolling their opponents. There were moments against Norwich where the defense just completely evaporated, and it was just five Liverpool guys running in on Tim Krul. And City, I don't know if it just took them one half to just get back to their last season selves, or if we might see them be slow starters in the coming game weeks.
I don't know either. I think they'll be fine. I think the Jesus Aguero thing is interesting now. I thought Aguero was going to really have that like just on lock going into the season. And now I'm not sure, you know. Also, Bernardo not playing at all was kind of a funky one, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is. And, a lot of people point to Pep's rhetoric around Bernardo Silva last season. He was basically his pet on the teams.
Right.
He if anyone deserved a start, he was the only one. But Sterling is the most consistent one. I mean, I guess to put a positive spin on it, De Bruyne looked great.
Yep.
He had attacking returns, so he wasn't like the "I'm terrified of KDB now in this deeper lying role." No, he was Hollywood passes, getting forward, the works. So, you know, we're just like one premium mid injury away from the exciting prospect of getting KDB into our FPL size. That's fun.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it really is. And we just need I think we're also we need one cheap, good midfielder to emerge. Like maybe it is Dendoncker. You know, and then you can maybe play four through the middle or you could downgrade Fraser to Dendoncker or something. I don't know. I'm trying to it's tricky right now. Like if you are firm in this idea that Salah and Sterling are a lock as your sort of rotating captain picks, or they're just like locking your team at least. It just gobbles up so much money, you know, that even 9.5 million for KDB is really tricky. Although I don't know, you've got an 11 million Kane and it worked out great for you. So I don't know what I'm talking about.
It only worked out for me because John McGinn came through, and this will be the game early on in the season. This is the game forever and always, is finding the cheaper budget options, the McGinns, the Dendonkers, who are going to fit. And we don't precisely know who they all are going to be for the rest of the season just after game week one, but we have a better idea now. So the job now is to zero in on those cheaper attacking mids and forwards who are going to work, so that we can then jam in more premiums, more exciting premiums that are really going to take us over the line.
Yeah, and the beauty of McGinn is that, you know, he scored in their hard fixture. You know, now they've got a great run of fixtures coming up. So, I'd be feeling really good about having him. All right, Brandon, point number seven is this is a thing I think. Ready? So, again, I'm going to clarify here. But what I'm thinking, and this is my instinct, which I went away from, is don't double up on the attack of a mediocre team. I'm thinking particularly here about Bournemouth. So Bournemouth are an interesting fantasy team, but overall they're a pretty mediocre team. I mean, they consistently finish mid table. They are capable of some shocking losses. They're also capable of scoring four or five goals in a match for sure. But they're not consistent. They're not going to steamroll people, and it's funny that you have a team like Man City, and obviously price is a factor here, but you have a team like Man City that wins every game 3-4, 5-6-0, or something like that. And I only have one attacking player from that team, and somehow I've got Fraser and Wilson, 15.5 million worth of Bournemouth in my team. I got 6 points out of them in that match. So, I don't love it as a, it doesn't typically feel like a good way to spend your money to be over invested in mid table or bottom half of the table teams, because they're just not typically the most consistent teams.
Somebody who actually may emerge, somebody who we wanted this to happen for last season, and we haven't said a single word about since then or in the preseason, is our man, Johan Gudmundsson and Burnley,
right?
6 million. And, he's crafty from the midfield, can put in some balls and also score some goals, arrive into the penalty box. Looked pretty good for a Burnley team that also looked pretty good. So, he looked decent. Brighton may offer some interesting budget options. And Aston Villa is probably, they're definitely making an early case of being the Wolves of this season with exciting attacking flair at a bargain price. So we've got some people to watch that might be, if Bournemouth truly doesn't work out, then I think we're starting to see what the other options are going
to
be.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see if Pulisic starts in game week two as well. He's someone that I would think about for game week three as a Ryan Fraser replacement. I feel like maybe I'm just putting this one even on here just for my personal team, but like, I'm feeling like Fraser and Wilson is too much Bournemouth, and I'm ready to dump one of them. I'm not going to do it before Aston Villa. But they play Man City in game week three, so that seems like a good time to do it. And in my head, I was thinking, and maybe this is just the American in me, but I was like, well, maybe if Pulisic has a good game week two, he starts in game week three, because game week three and four they play Norwich and Sheffield back to back, and so. That would be a nice time to have, a Chelsea midfielder. Chelsea, which we haven't really talked about too much yet, but they're sort of, they're a funny team. You look at their team now, like their midfield, and it's like, especially with Loftus-Cheek and Hudson-Odoi out, two really exciting young players. Like they kind of feel like they look like Leicester or something, right? They don't look like a top four team, really. You know, it's like a their forwards are a mess, right? It's Tammy Abraham has never, you know, outside of Giroud, who's getting old, you know, I mean, old for football, you know, it's all these 7 million forwards and, you know, their midfield is it's Pedro, whose best years are 5 years behind him, probably, you know, Ross Barkley, super inconsistent, subbed off in the 58th minute. Mason Mount hasn't done anything in the league yet. Kovacic, Jorginho, Pulisic. I mean, it's like there's not a lot to like there.
It looks like a project.
It does. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's one way to put it. A mediocre team is another way to put it. You know, I mean, like, and even that defense, right? It's like that defense does not. It's like, I mean, Christensen and Zuma, like that's not like a.
Kurt Zuma has been on loan for an age, and the teams he's been on loan to have been Everton, not known for their defensive prowess. Stoke Bloody right. City.
Yeah,
this is not a guy who's come back from his travels, his internships, his work experience, and is ready to challenge for a Champions League spot.
Yeah, and you know, Christensen has looked good in a, you know, three at the back before, but I mean, as one of the only two central defenders, I mean, he's unproven at the very least, you know. So I don't know, Emerson almost scored today. I guess that's in his pocket, but yeah, it's just a funny team. And so, yeah, what is going on with did Alonso even play today? He didn't play at all, right? So is he just not a starter in that team anymore?
Surely Emerson is the man there now. It's kind of been threatened for some time. I mean, under multiple managers now. So I think that's one of the things that, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the Chelsea lineup. We definitely need one or two more game weeks worth of information there.
Totally.
Lampard had some nice things to say about Pulisic after the match.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all very diplomatically said, so I don't want to read too much into it.
Yeah. And they had a couple shots off the, you know, post and stuff. So, you know, like it could have looked a little less embarrassing, you know, in the end. Yeah. And then they play, you know, Leicester, Norwich, Sheffield, the next three. It's a good run. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, you finish your thought.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I just look at that starting 11, and I really only see one player that I think of as, you know, truly world-class, and Azpilicueta, and, you know, the other 10 just feel like question marks to me. So it's, I don't know, it's interesting.
I want to talk about Bournemouth just a little bit more. So I didn't really watch much of this game beyond the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
So there are three main FPL targets here. It's Josh King, it's Callum Wilson, and Ryan Fraser. Of those three, who was the one that stood out as still the pick? Like, going to have one.
I mean, none of them. Metham, maybe. I don't know. Like, there was, I mean, Phil Billing was heavily involved. I mean, he didn't look great or anything. Almost had an assist, I guess.
Disrespect Phil Billing.
Right. I mean, Ryan Fraser, it's like, it's always hard. Like, he has the ball a lot. And so, of course, like, I mean, it's one game, so I don't want to overreact. But, you know, it's like, they were really effectively stymied by Sheffield. Let's just say that. And I expect them to be a little better this week. Of the trilogy of King, Wilson, and Fraser, none of them were particularly impressive. So,
okay. It's like having three Phantom Menaces and none of them even reached the heights of Revenge of the Sith.
Like, I feel like I can't even answer your question because I don't know who I would like. No one had a great moment or anything. I mean, I guess Wilson almost scored, and his assist was one of those palmed away rebound goals, you know? So,
All right, let's move on then. So we've got three more things. The eighth thing that we think premium strikers are ready for your consideration. Goals from each: Kane, Aguero, and Aubameyang. So the template, such as it was, looking at people all around the Twitter sphere, not a lot of premium strikers out there. Aubameyang was getting quite a lot of love coming out of the summer break because he was scoring goals for fun in the preseason.
Right.
But here we are. We've got three stalwart premium strikers who produced in game week one.
Right.
How are you feeling having your team sort of organized around not a premium striker?
Well, I mean, just if we think about it, you know, I mean, the thing is, you know, Aguero finished on 5 points, Aubameyang finished on 6. Kane did finish on 13, but I mean, you know, both of his goals came late in that. I mean, no disrespect to, I mean, you know, he looked, once Christian Eriksen came on, he looked like, you know, he looked much, much better. So,
sure.
You know, maybe if Eriksen plays the whole match, he has a hat trick or something.
I agree. Like the goals didn't come easy for any of them. Kane had to wait. Aguero missed the first penalty that he took to get the goal that he got. Right. And Aubameyang seemed to be the only attacking player on the pitch for Arsenal.
So, I mean, the problem is that these players are 1.5 to 2 times expensive as the defenders, who basically did as well, if not better than them. You know, I mean, you know, Lucas Digne outscored Aguero and he's half the price, you know. So I don't think that there was a, you know, and Kane did score a brace, but, you know, they were playing a promoted team in a featured match on, the first weekend. Like it's a match where you would expect him to do really well, you know. I think the bigger test will come in game week 2, obviously, away to City. So I didn't come away. I mean, it's almost like you got to pick your spot, you know, or pick your poison. I don't know. It's like you can either have like a lot of money invest in your defense or a lot of money up front. And it's kind of hard to have both, you know? And, I don't think we know yet what the right approach is, you know, or maybe both approaches work. I think this weekend, certainly if you had Kane, if you had Kane, that was probably enough for you to have a pretty solid game week. So, you know, I don't know. So, but I don't feel like I'm itching to have a big forward. It doesn't make me feel like I made a mistake with my game week 1 team.
Yeah. Well, the premium strikers aren't thinking about you either, Josh. So, so there.
Yeah, I don't think about you at all. Brendan, should we move on to number 9? Got 2 more to go here.
Yeah.
All right. Number 9 is
let's go.
Promoted sides look to have decent attackers, particularly Norwich and Aston Villa. Pukki. I mean, we talked about McGinn already in Aston Villa, so yeah, credit to him. Uh-huh. But our boy Pukki. I mean, I'm gonna like be honest here, Brandon. I am very seriously considering Pukki as my game week 2 transfer. Very seriously considering that. Uh huh.
So he's coming out. Who? Let me. So Jota's coming out for
Pukki? No Delafeu. I mean,
Delafeu. Of course.
Yeah, Delafeu was an insane pick. I never should have done it. It was. I don't know what I was drinking when he was in my team. You don't bring in a player with a muscle injury. That's just not a thing you do. Of course, he was hooked at halftime. And so he's gone. And now they play Everton away, which is like not the worst fixture in the world, but it's not a good fixture. And like, who knows if he even starts, right? And I just don't, I'm done. Yeah. And so just bring in my boy Pukki. They play Newcastle at home in game week 2. It's gonna be the first match at home for the promoted Norwich. I don't know. It seems it's kind of appealing, you know? If I had like extra money, I would maybe consider, you know, bringing in Aller. I don't really want to hold a transfer for a week though to bring him in. I think I'm just going to move now. And I kind of said this last week too. Like I like the idea of just before I wildcard, sort of spending my transfers, moving around these cheap forwards, you know, and just trying to maximize each game week, you know, get the most out of it.
Yeah, I guess Buendia is really the only other attacking player at Norwich that stood out. He was on all the set pieces. He did provide the assist to Pukki, but if you're going to recommend anyone, Pukki was really the only player for Norwich that stood out to me in any sort of meaningful eye test way. Yeah. So I'm with you there. As far as Villa goes, I mean, McGinn scored the goal, but I think so many of their midfielders had opportunities. Grealish was... You know, he was defending in the backfield, but he was getting far and releasing lots of great counter-attacking opportunities for the team. So Grealish, I think, will have attacking points at some point. But El Ghazi looked great as well. Wesley up front, not totally sold on him. He spent most of his time crumpling to the ground.
I agree. I talked about him already, but Billy Sharp, I mean, if he's a starter, he's just old. I think that's really the issue there, you know, but I don't need to be, I feel like I'm just repeating myself now, but I did come away feeling like Sheffield United are like a pretty decent team, like a team that look like they're capable of staying up this year. So I don't really know what that
means.
Can we
talk about John Lundstrom?
Yeah, playing for his career, it sounds like. I mean, so Sheffield United have made this this new signing, and there's some concern now that he's going to Mo Besic has come into Sheffield United, and the talk is that Besic is in the Lundstrom spot. So he may lose his spot. I don't know. It was enough for me to
surely this one bonus point that Lundstrom gained Curry's favor in the front office of Sheffield United, right?
Lundstrom got the bonus point, and Dendoncker almost scored. It would have been an amazing week if Greenwood had also done something when he came in from Man United. It would have been a great week for the template 4.5 million players, but it didn't come off.
All right, we've got one last thing to talk about in our Things We Think section. Number 10, we are ready for the new mid-table, the reemergence of Burnley, and yes, the official emergence of Graham Potter's Brighton.
Yeah,
we got a question from Nervous Ned on our Slack. With so many convincing wins for Brighton, Burnley, and Manchester United, yes, part of the new mid-table, we're not really FPL asset-heavy teams. Do we invest now or hold for more evidence that this is opening day madness? So I guess let's talk mostly about Burnley and Brighton here, which I think are really interesting teams that maybe didn't get their full due in preseason coverage.
Yeah. Well, Brighton, I watched most of the Brighton one. It was on the same time as the Bournemouth match, and I was at the Black Horse over the weekend, and they were on screens right next to each other. So I watched both of them pretty closely. I was really impressed. I mean, there was all the talk was about what Potter was going to bring to this team. And I felt like I was kind of in like a, I'll believe it when I see it mode. It was the problem is it's really hard to know, who you'd want from this team. Right now, I mean, from a fan, defense aside, like who in the midfield and attack would you want? It's kind of tricky, I mean, Pascal Gross, sure. And playing the full 90, which he like never did under Chris Hughton.
Yeah, he's a 59-minute legend, Pascal Gross.
He was. But he's 6.5 million, so that's more than a punt category. That's like, I'm investing in you, and I think you're going to be important to my team money.
Yeah, you're basically giving him like fringe benefits, health insurance, vacation time, all that. It's a heavy investment.
It's exactly. He needs to meet your director or something, before you can make that.
Yeah, this is not a phone interview situation.
The forwards are kind of tricky though too, right? You had Murray and Lacadia both played 60 minutes, both got subbed off, and then the two players who got subbed on for them scored. So what does that mean? I have no idea. They're all cheap, but I'm nervous. And then you have Trossard, who is like the kind of the hipster pick. My friend Stag, who I was watching the game with on Saturday, was crestfallen when would not come on the pitch. He has these amazing stats from last season. These like extraordinary stats, didn't play a minute, but he's kind of the player that everyone's excited about. I say everyone, his ownership is 0.7%, but a lot of people are excited to see what his, what he turns into. So does he play next game week? So, I mean, it's cool, but like, who do you pick,
It's a weirdly deep squad up front for Brighton, but talk about these. It's a good one, Josh. You could talk about where the value is on these teams, but the 6 million striker who scores for Brighton, whoever he may be, you're going to bring him into your squad and he's not going to score a goal every game week. What you really need from a Brighton asset is an assurance that he's going to start every week.
Right.
More than even the attacking returns, you need an assurance that this person is going to show up.
Yeah.
So you don't want Trossard. So I think what we need to think about here is, wait a few weeks, see who is sort of starting to get locked into that starting 11 for Mr. Potter, and then those will be the guys.
Yeah, exactly. And, so hopefully we start to know more next week. It'd be fun to make if I even knew which forward to have in Brighton, I would definitely consider it as a transfer. But, you know, as it is, yeah, I think I've exactly. You just kind of have to wait a week and wait a week or three maybe to really know who you want.
Yeah, and with Burnley, I think maybe we got too cute with our predictions that Chris Wood might emerge as the tall, domineering Kiwi that we know he is, and Ashley Barnes just remains the man.
Yeah, totally. I mean, overrating preseason, you know, classic mistake. Goodmanson, you know, if he'd come in cheaper, he might have been a more tempting option. I think at $6 million, it feels a little high for him. I mean, his returns last season were 3 goals and 7 assists. I mean, that's not a spectacular return. And, you know, I don't know. Even Westwood's too expensive. McNeil, you know, didn't play significantly well. When he got subbed off, it was kind of like, I was like, oh, right, McNeil's on this team. You know, like he didn't have any big moments in that match. So the defense looks good. You know, it seems like
bad news for Charlie Taylor, though, that Eric Peters comes in and plays a blinder and gets 2 assists. So.
I have to admit, I was really off on this one because I was really seriously considering Charlie Taylor. And who knew? I don't know. Like,
props to the Burnley. Props to the Burnley correspondent at fantasyfootballscout.co.uk who predicted the back line perfectly, and that's what caused me to go for Loughton over Charlie Taylor, and that kind of saved my bacon this game week.
Fair enough. And if somebody, you know, yeah, I'm sorry for anybody who had Taylor. It was almost me as well. You know, I don't know. It's like sometimes you have to wait till one game week is played to know. I mean, you know, Leitner played in like every preseason match for Norwich, and then he made the bench at game week one, and he's in my squad as well. I mean, he's on the bench, but still.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, this is why like early wild cards often make a lot of sense, because like, you know, 2 weeks in, like things mistakes are so much clearer. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Excellent. Josh, those are the 10 things we think. Game week one, that was a wild ride. But let's take a quick break, gather our thoughts and turn our focus to game week two and preview our transfers and captain picks, maybe some clean sheet predictions going into game week two.
Excellent. Let's do it. All right, Brian, we're back. Typically, we would have a lightning round here. We're going a little long this week, though, so we're going to skip the lightning round. Sorry to anyone who had a question that did not get answered in this week's podcast. We're going to go right into the game week two preview. We've got, you know, a couple things we want to talk about, transfers and captains. I think we've already kind of gone into them a lot. My big move this week is I'm transferring out Deulofeu, barring any major injuries this week. I think one of the things you've got to do if you want to have a good season is just give up on a player very quickly sometimes, and especially if they're not a huge, you know, a 10 plus million investment. And Deulofeu was a mistake, and I want to get him out. You know, I want to cut out the virus or whatever, cut out the tumor. I don't want to go too extreme here. You know, he had one match, but I just felt like
it's not a tumor.
Well, part of it is he's like an out of position midfielder too, right? It's like, that's like when I was sort of annoyed with myself, because I was like, right, so I didn't bring in Jose Perez, who is an out of position forward, so that I could bring in Deulofeu, who is a forward playing as a midfielder. Like, what was I thinking here? You know, so I just want to correct that right off the bat. Day. Yeah, and the rest of my team I feel okay about. Captains, definitely leaning towards Sterling myself. What about you, transfers and captains?
Yeah, I think the one standout blunder I made with my game week squad team was buying into the Gilbert hype, the wingback, the fullback for Aston Villa, who didn't get a minute, didn't start. And I think with the concern around Lundstrom and his starting position, I need a backup starting defender on my bench. So I think I don't have any problems that I see with my starting lineup. I mean, Shea Adams and Josh King, they didn't come through for me, and particularly Adams having Liverpool this week. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. They host Southampton. They're home, though. Liverpool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I will stick with Shea Adams and Josh King. Just, you know, not everyone's going to jettison all of their Bournemouth assets all of a sudden.
No, that'd
preach a little patience there.
That'd be silly. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So Gilbert is going to go, just going to shore up my defense. I'm really not sure what other 4.5 defender I'm going to go with, but I'm just going to size up the options, maybe a Brighton defender.
Yeah.
And captain right now, if I pull up my bus team, I still have the armband on Salah, and Southampton leaking 3 this weekend. You'd think Liverpool could still put some goals past Southampton on the road.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely compelled by the Sterling argument, and I don't think Spurs are going to be a brick wall by any stretch at the Etihad.
I think it's an interesting weekend ahead. Just looking at the fixtures, Brandon, just as a like fan of the sport, I think there's a lot of fun matches. I mean, even Arsenal Burnley is like a fun match to start off the weekend. I don't plan to have anybody in that match. I have Pope, but I'm planning to start Dean Henderson
pure
instead.
Watch.
Yeah, kind of a pure watch to kick things off. Sort of, I think we, you know, probably see some more of Arsenal's new players in that match too. Hopefully we'll see Kolasinac and Ozil too. Like, that's a crazy, crazy story.
What
there.
What's going on there?
Yeah.
Are they embroiled in the Epstein case or what?
I don't know. It's a, I hope they're like, it's a terrible thing.
I do hope they're safe. I don't want to be flipped.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I know you're just kidding. Man City Spurs on Saturday is a really interesting early season match. I think it's a lot easier to feel better about Spurs having watched all 90 minutes of that match. I think the first 70 or so, it was getting a little scary. I thought Lucas Moura played well. I didn't feel like he was he played so well that I walked out of that thinking, oh man, I really wish I had more in my squad, you know? So I think, I think we have like, we'll learn something about both teams in this match. I guess we'll learn if Bernardo Silva is still a starter in this team. I don't know. He's got to start, right? Over Mahrez, I guess.
Oh, and just going back to Liverpool and the idea of captaining Salah, certainly we need to collect more information midweek when they play is it the Super Cup?
Right. Yeah.
Is the Super Cup a golf tournament or the Super Cup that's not a golf tournament they're playing in?
Yep.
And they're playing in some far-flung country on Wednesday against Chelsea, the Europa League champions.
Yeah.
So curious to see what the lineup is for both of those squads, but mostly Liverpool, just to check ourselves on any potential rotation threat.
God, wouldn't that be awful if they played anybody meaningful in that game? Like, that does not seem like a game that anybody, it's like an exhibition, right? It's like an exhibition that comes after the season starts. It's just, I hate that kind of stuff.
I do wonder if the star attacking players get run out for just strictly 60 minutes. I would be satisfied if the likes of Salah and Mane were played for 60 to 70 minutes, then subbed off. Then I'd still be feeling pretty gung ho about their. Steamrolling Southampton.
Yeah, no, I would too. I wouldn't worry too much about rotation this early in the season. But I would love if Trent didn't play, for example. I mean, especially just having just played in the Community Shield as well. You know, it just feels like kind of a, I don't know, like one too many exhibitions for them this season. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and then I think Wolves Man United on Monday should be a really interesting match.
Oh, for sure, and I think. They've historically had really great matchups, or at least historically, like last season. But you skipped over a fun one on Saturday, which is the Marco Silva derby, Everton hosting Watford.
Yeah, true. I mean, Everton, one of these teams will probably score a goal eventually, right? And so I guess then we'll know. I don't know. Yeah, it's hard. I'm not that excited about that match because I watched them both play this weekend and I just did I was not impressed with either one. So Lucas Dean, kind of a nice little clean sheet there, especially Schneiderlin got a red card in the 77th minute.
Ridiculous player.
Yeah. And Chelsea Leicester too. I mean, I guess we're not even allowed to talk about fantasy. We're just talking about matches we want to watch now. But I think Chelsea Leicester should be a fun one too. I expect Leicester to finally score a goal this season in that match too. I mean, especially considering how Chelsea's defense looked in today's match.
You were kind of wincing when you looked at Chelsea hosting Leicester game week two when you bring in a guy like Perez or whether it's Madison. For game week one, you're like, well, that's not a great road fixture for Leicester. But yeah, having watched Chelsea against Manchester United, suddenly I'm really excited to see how Perez looks.
Yeah, and I thought Madison, I thought looked really good too. I'd love to have Madison on my team right now. All right, Brandon, that is your podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, you can become a Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. We have lots of features, one extra podcast a week, and we have access to the Slack, t-shirts, all kinds of cool stuff and giveaways that are part of becoming a patron. And Brandon, we have some producer thank yous. We are going to do our new patron thank yous in a moment. We're going to do our producer thank yous first. We did them second last time. It feels like we've got to move them up to first this time. So Brandon, yes. Take it away.
All right. Thanks to our producers, Paul Herzig, Victor Forberg, Skogan, Alan Creasy, Blair Jacobson, Nick Wright, Staya Nihus, Kaja, Christine Lileng, Brian Chin, Travis West, Frederick Kion Gransky, Dave Wagner Lodahl, Danny Evans, Brian Jacobson, Andy Penn, Jazz Binning, Christian Carter, Babas Kuhn, James Holland, Ben Grant, Jeff Husby, The Big Gaffer, Trevor Ingerson, Brian T., Nick Costello, Jim Payne, Adam Benjamin, Martin Savage, Chris Howell, Stephen Toomey, and Mike DiPietro. Thanks to all of you. And remember to rate, review, subscribe to the Always Cheating Podcast wherever fine podcasts are found, like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Acast. Follow us on Twitter at Hail Cheaters, Instagram at Hail Cheaters, Facebook.com/AlwaysCheating. Send us an email with a lengthy message if you like. That's HailCheaters@gmail.com. All this information, including our shop where you can find Mystic Mia Third Eye FC's new Always Cheating t-shirt for sale. Go to AlwaysCheating.com. You can also find the league code to the Always Cheating Super League right there. Now on to the Patreon thank yous. Josh, you want to start with our new producers that some of them just got name checked there?
That sounds great. How about I just go until I run out of breath, all right? And then you can take it from there, Brandon.
I'll pick up the baton.
All right.
Okay, sounds good.
New producer thank yous. These are extra special thank yous to Jim Payne, a longtime patron who just became a new re-up producer patron, Nick Wright, Blair Jacobson, Alan Creasy, Victor Forberg, Skogang, Paul Herzig, Kaja Christine Lilang, and Stian Niehaus. Sorry if I mispronounced anyone's name there. I'm sure I did. Volkswagen patrons, Chris Akins and Kate McCartan. Thank you to Chris and Kate. Lord Soloff patrons, Corey Cummings, Justin Stout, Aftab Muhammad, Johnny Holden, Martin, Kevin Kehoe, John Pima, David Flynn, Matt O'Loughlin, Brent Christie, Ian Brownie, Manny Still, Christopher Gray, Matt Lubin, Seeley Arms, Jake Thomas, Mike Tomset, Stuart Bell, Pete Iverty, Brandon, I'm starting to fade here, Pete Iverty, Gibbo, Nathan, George Grondalen. Now you go.
Keep going. Okay, Tom Eklund, Arila, Justin Price, Jens Engman, James DeGriff, Kenny Lau, Spicy, Glenn. I love a guy just named Glenn. Welcome, Glenn. Frode Johansson. Chris Brown, Stein Gould, Danny McFeely, Jonathan Brooks, Matthias Jensen, Dallas Bolton, Chris Curry, Kim Arn Hammerstad, James Massey, Sven Gorn Bennetson, Stray Bullet, Jono, JBAFC, Oscar Harp, Edward Weibert, Ben Local, Jordy Camps, Errol Stav, Peter Matheson, Carl Bergstrom, Dave Addison, Chris Fox, Sam, Michael Broadbent, Alex Stevens, Mark Tilley, Rob Stevenson, Alex Favato, Sam Joseph, Russell Armstrong, Henrik Wahlgren, Eider Sledbo. When I finish this section, you can take the
sure.
Josh. Alan McCormick, Brian Fox, Dan Floden, Tim Van Dyke, Mark, James Erlam, Jing Rang, and Miko Leitman. Wow. Welcome to all of our Lord Sarlacc.
We're gonna have to start like speeding this up to like 1.5 speed or something. And, you know, I want to be respectful but speedy. That's what I'm gonna start going for. Although obviously we get it's a big surge of patrons at the start of a new season, so we won't be these ridiculously long. Maybe we will, Brandon. Who knows? You know, let's be optimistic here.
Then we'll start reading the names of all the people who leave the patron.
And the Pookie patrons, Nim Wallace, Amorheat, Kevin Barony, Michael Shade, Iman, Stephanie Kruzik, Tim McCarthy, Chris Betton, Marcus Rinaldi, Edgar Sanchez, Reese, Jan Blikers, and Adrian Farouk. Thank you to everybody. And Brandon, hail Lord Sarlacc. I'm so sad that he is gone from the Premier League this season. He's on a season-long loan now. Very sad.
Yep. Poku never made it. Sorloth is gone. Vokes is gone. Mbakani is just out there crushing it somewhere else. Yeah. So we miss you all, but we hail you all the same. We'll see our patrons on our Kitchen Table Pod later this week. To everyone else, good luck in Game Week 2. Hope you had fun in Game Week 1. The season's off and running.
And hail Poku, Brandon. The one who lived.
Yeah, Pookie.
Yep.
The Finn who lived.